Now, Connect FM Sports puts every play under review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing.
Dave and Dave are busy tonight, so I'm flying solo. But have no fear, there will be plenty of talk on this week's show. Tonight's show is a special show focused on getting you ready for the NFL Draft. I'll talk to Justin Mello from the Draft Network for a macro view of what to expect across the league. Afterwards, we will drill down on the Steelers and the prospects that might interest them in this year's draft by talking to Brian Batko and Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm Bob Anderson. Stay tuned as we discuss these topics and more as we go under review on Connect FM, your only local news radio. Welcome to Under Review for Wednesday, April 17th. Dee is out in San Francisco for work, and Dave is busy as well, so you get me and me alone on this week's show. And in case you didn't know, next week is my version of Christmas. It's NFL Draft Week. We will not have a show on Wednesday due to the Pirates game, but mark your calendars. We have a special live draft show scheduled for Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. Again, we will have that show on Thursday night at 7 o'clock p.m. live in the lead up to the NFL draft that kicks off at 8 o'clock. You won't want to miss that. Anyway, I don't want to belabor this, but for this hour, I have lined up a few guests to join me. Not one guest, not two, but three guests for tonight's show who know a lot more about the NFL draft than I do. Justin Mello will be joining me in the next segment, and we'll dive into the wider league. And then we'll go Steelers-centric in the last half of the show with a couple of Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporters. Brian Batko and Jerry Dulac will join me. Anyhow, in this opening segment, I wanted to run you guys through a mock draft simulator and give you an idea of what maybe the Steelers will be thinking as they make their picks on Thursday and Friday and into Saturday of next week. Now, I'm only going to worry about rounds 1 through 4 because I don't profess to know enough about the late round prospects to even attempt trying that. But I'm going to use a mock draft simulator here, and you can Google those and try your hand at one. But I'm going to do the NFL mock draft database simulator. It's fun to play around with them. It's fun to experiment with different types of strategies and to see who might be available, who might not be available. Now, just for the record, the Steelers have pick 20 in round 1, but they have picks 51 in round 2, and then 84 and 98 in round 3. They have two third-round picks. Remember, that was all a part of the Kenny Pickett deal. And then pick 119 in round 4. Now, you can trade in these simulators, but I tend not to because I generally find trading to be a little bit unrealistic on these simulators. So for me, there are several holes here that we have to address, but let's go ahead and get right into it. I'm going to hit start on the simulator here, and we'll run down through the picks. And right now at pick 20, I can tell you who is off the board: Caleb Williams, Drake May, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, J.J. McCarthy, Dallas Turner, Joe Alt, Brock Bowers, Quinion Mitchell, Jared Verse, Brian Thomas Jr., Troy Fautanu, Cooper DeJean, J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims, and Olu Fashanu are all off the board here. So when we get to the Steelers, I've got a decision to make. And right now, what I'd like to look at is who are the centers that are available, because that is a huge position of need. And I forgot to mention Graham Barton is off the board, a center. So the best available centers right now are Jackson Powers Johnson and Zach Frazier. To me, there's a clear top three in the center positions. It's Barton, it's JPJ, and it's Frazier. But at tackle, there's almost a guy here that's staring at me that is just too good to pass up. And that is Talese Fuaga from Oregon State. And if you could get him, man, you would have two great tackles to work with for the next maybe 10 years. And he is a pure right tackle, and he is a road grader. So to me, I think that might be a little bit too much to pass up. At receiver, A.D. Mitchell is available, Ladd McConkey, Xavier Worthy. But I feel like I've got to solidify that offensive line. So I'm going to go ahead and draft Talese Fuaga and hope that maybe by some luck or miracle, a center falls to me here in the second round. I have my doubts. So the picks are going through here. And we're up at pick 51. Wow, you're not going to believe this, and I hope it works out like this in real life, but Zach Frazier from West Virginia is staring at me. He is still available, and I've done these simulators many times, and I did not fudge the system here. Usually, all three centers are gone, and that's a big conundrum for the Steelers because I feel like they're in sort of no man's land between 20 and 51 where all three of those centers might go. They may need to trade up in round two to get one of them. But Zach Frazier is right there. That's an easy pick for me, but I will tell you who some of the wide receivers are because that is very tempting as well. Troy Franklin from Oregon is there. Ricky Pearsall from Florida. Roman Wilson from Michigan are all there. I love all three of those players, especially Pearsall and Wilson, but I cannot pass up an offensive lineman, so I'm going to go ahead and take Zach Frazier here. And if the Steelers draft goes like this next week, I will be thrilled beyond belief to solidify the offensive line. I can tell you the last time the Steelers took two offensive linemen back-to-back, first round and second, was in 2012. So we'll see if they can do it again. All right, so we made that pick. We're up again here in the third round with the first of our two picks at pick 84. And I'm going to be looking mostly at wide receiver and cornerback here. At cornerback right now, I see Oregon's Kyree Jackson, Kentucky's Andrew Phillips, Auburn's DJ James. There is several down the line here. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. from Louisville, Kalen King from Penn State, Elijah Jones from Boston College, and Jerrion Jones from Florida State. I like a couple of those guys a lot. At wide receiver, though, we got Jermaine Burton from Alabama, Jalen McMillan from Washington, Javon Baker from UCF, Malik Washington from Virginia, and I really like that, a couple of those. Jermaine Burton might be the most talented of the bunch, but he also has some character issues, and I feel like when you have George Pickens on your team, you almost need somebody to be a little better influence. So Washington, I'm going to go with Jalen McMillan here. He is one of those three big three from Washington. They had an outstanding wide receiver group last year. I'm going to take him. I really like what he can bring, and I'm going to hope one of those cornerbacks makes it to us here at pick 98. All right, so sure enough, I'm looking here, and there's Kyree Jackson from Oregon and Andrew Phillips from Kentucky who are still on the board. I like both of those guys. If you're looking for a slot, maybe Andrew Phillips might be a little bit more of your flavor. Kyree Jackson, he seems like more of an outside guy to me. I'm not an expert on him, but I like both of those guys. Phillips, a very physical player. Jackson, maybe more of a man-up kind of guy. Could maybe take Dante Jackson's place next year if they don't re-sign him. Or Dante Johnson, sorry. I'm going to go ahead and take, I'll take Andrew Phillips here. I just think that the need for a slot is maybe a little greater this year, and they're sort of in win mode now. So I'm going to take Andrew Phillips here, and I'm going to let the draft play out. We have one more round to go, and we're up here in the fourth round. Now, at this position, in the fourth round, I think you can go best player available. Linebacker, defensive line, safety, all of those are big needs. But when I look here at the defensive line, I don't see a whole lot available. Mekhi Wingo from LSU kind of stands out. Other than that, I don't really know many of those guys. Safety, I don't profess to know who these fellows are. At linebacker, there's a couple guys that catch my eye. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is there, and Cedric Gray from North Carolina is there. Those are two names that I'm intrigued by. It's the fourth round. Cole Holcomb, I believe, is only on one more year for his deal, and they've had a hard time solidifying that middle of the defense. So I'm going to go ahead and take Cedric Gray here from North Carolina. I think that he would be a nice fit with the Steelers, and that's going to end my four picks in the first four rounds. So you can play around with this on your own in the mock draft simulator. You can find these online all over the place. My picks were in the first round, Tally Fuaga, second round, Zach Frazier, third round, I took Jalen McMillan, wide receiver, Andrew Phillips, cornerback, and then Cedric Gray with the linebacker position. All right. So, now that we had a little taste of our own mock draft, we're going to talk to some people who know a lot more about this than I do. When we return, we're going to talk to the first of three guests tonight. Justin Mello from the Draft Network will join us. Stay with us on Under Review. Welcome back to Under Review. Joining us on the line right now is Justin Mello from the Draft Network. Thanks for joining us again, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Appreciate you guys for having me on.
Appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a busy time of year for you. I wanted to take kind of a wider look at the draft with you today, Justin, and we'll start with the quarterback position. I know that's garnered a lot of coverage, and it will probably early next Thursday. In addition to Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May, there's been a lot of buzz about J.J. McCarthy. Do you think we might see four quarterbacks go with the first four picks for the first time in NFL draft history?
I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility, right? Like, I think we're almost a lock that they're going to at least go 1, 2, 3. When you get to that fourth overall pick, I've sort of had to separate my opinion on what I think the Cardinals should do versus what I think they might do.
Sure.
I look at a team that's got already has 7 picks within the opening 104 selections in the draft. They've got 7 top 104 picks. You look at that roster, and it needs premium talent at premium positions. You know, I don't know that that's a team that needs more picks. What they need is really good football players, right?
Yeah.
So when I look at them at that fourth pick, you know, again, my personal opinion is that I've got a hard time understanding why they would trade out of the Marvin Harrison Jr. pick. Essentially, that's what that is, right? So you look at that depth chart. Michael Wilson, an unproven sophomore, is currently the number one receiver, right? And they've made a sizable financial commitment to Kyler Murray as their franchise quarterback. So, well, now it's time to surround him with talent. So I would stick and pick if I was the Cardinals. But general manager Monty Ossenfort does love to move up and down the board. He did it a bunch of times last year, right, acquiring extra picks in the Texans deal, then moving back up for Paris Johnson Jr. So he's someone that loves to play around the board, move up and down as required. So I think if he gets blown away with an offer, we have to accept the possibility that he might disagree with me and he might move down for a team that wants to come up for a quarterback at 4.
Yeah, I think a lot of us saw those videos on Twitter there, and it was fun to watch that wheeling and dealing, but you might be right. Sticking and picking might make sense. How about which team do you think would be the most likely to move up and snag one of those 4 quarterbacks? You think it's Minnesota?
I mean, you'd have to think it's got to be the Vikings. That deal that they made, you know, a very unique one to acquire that 23rd pick from the Houston Texans, to me, that screams positioning themselves to make an aggressive move up the board, right? Like, it's very pricey, typically speaking, to get into the top 4 or top 5, especially when you're picking outside the top 10. So I thought that was a move by general manager Kwesi Adofo-Mensah to go and get another pick so he could position himself. And then you look at some of the other contenders, the Denver Broncos, they don't have a lot of draft capital, right, based on some of the moves, you know, the move they made for Russell Wilson a couple years ago. So when I look at the capital of what they have versus what the Vikings have, you know, the Raiders are a wild card. They could potentially, but, you know, they're at pick 13, excuse me, so they're lower than the Vikings and Broncos. They're already at a bit of a disadvantage. With the Vikings having the earliest pick of that trio, all 3 quarterback needy teams picking 11, 12, 13, with the Vikings having the first pick of that trio, Then being the only team that has another first-round pick this year, I think it makes them the no-brainer likeliest candidate to move up.
Well, how likely do you think it is that we see a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix go in round one?
You know, I don't think it's as likely as mock draft season will have you believe. I'm seeing that very frequently, right? Some of them are putting them at, 12, 13 to the Broncos and Raiders.
Right.
I don't know that that's going to be the case. I think if those two teams miss out on the premium quarterback prospect, meaning they can't move up for one of the top four, I don't know that they're going to go ahead and, reach for one of those quarterbacks. I mean, you look at both of their situations. The Broncos just moved on from a catastrophic mistake with Russell Wilson. I don't know that they should feel comfortable reaching for another quarterback. And I look at the Raiders, their offseason dealings tell me that they're going to be patient with that position as well. They made the inevitable move when they cut ties with Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, then they didn't go out and get super aggressive, right? They went out and signed Gardner Minshew. And they've got a first-year GM and what's essentially a first-year head coach now that Antonio Pierce no longer has the interim tag. I think that signals patience. Hey, we're going to wait to get our guy. Look, teams do, silly things on draft weekend all the time. I like Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix, both of them, but I don't think they're top 13 players in this class. I don't think they're one of the bona fide first-round quarterbacks. And both of those teams, they've got second-round picks. So, I wouldn't be stunned if those guys are available in the second when those teams come on the board. So, again, I've had to try to separate here what I think versus what sometimes happens. But ultimately, I do think those two things line up this time. I don't think we're going to see more than four quarterbacks in the first round.
All right, well, moving on to the wide receiver class, it's called one of the deepest ever. How many wide receivers do you have with round one grades?
A bunch of them is the answer to
yeah.
that question. I mean, but the top three are obviously top 10 players in the class with Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. I'm extremely high on Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU as well. In fact, I'm not quite sure why we haven't seen more first-round buzz for the two of them. It seems to be inconsistent when you take a tour around mock drafts. Look, Brian Thomas Jr. led the nation this past year, I believe, in touchdown receptions it was. Adonai A.D. Mitchell had an explosive season at Texas as well. Both of them, they became the second and third receivers at the NFL Combine in the last 10 years to have the size that they've got, 6'3", 205, and run a 4.35 40-yard dash or better. The only other one, the only other receiver that's done that in the past 10 years or so was DK Metcalf of the Seattle Seahawks. We know how that turned out. So when I look at these two guys, I see the production, check the box. I see the size, the athleticism, check the box. The testing at the combine, check a box. I don't really have any questions on them and why they wouldn't be top 32 picks. I think those five should be locks. And then I look at some of the others. Of course, you got to take into account what Xavier Worthy ran at the combine. Teams crave speed. He set the all-time record in the 40-yard dash. And then I think there are a couple others that have a shot, guys like Keon Coleman out of Florida State, Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. So there are a bunch of them. I got at least first-round grades on this receiver class.
Well, that's exciting for Steelers fans because I am hoping that one of them falls to the second round. Now, they don't pick till pick 51, and I'm curious, do you have a receiver in that range that you think would be a good fit with the Steelers? I've seen a lot of like Ricky Pearsall. I would love Ladd McConkey. I just doubt he'll be there. Is there somebody that catches your eye, Justin?
I think, if one of those three that I mentioned, specifically Coleman or Leggett, if one of them slide there, I think they'd especially show a lot of interest in Leggett. But Ricky Pearsall, he's one that certainly captures my attention. Roman Wilson from Michigan as well, I think would be in play for them at 51. When I look at guys like McConkey, Wilson, Pearsall, they've got some things in common, right, where they're not the biggest guys in the class, but they're elite separators, right, like short area quickness, that ability to beat man coverage with consistency. I think that's something they're going to need in Pittsburgh. With George Pickens being, I think, more of a contested catch guy, you'd like to see him get a bit more separation, create some more distance between himself and his man with more consistency. That's something they lost a little in Deontay Johnson, right, who I thought was a really good short area separator. So when I look at guys of that type in this class, certainly, you know, the Ricky Pearsalls and the Roman Wilsons come to mind as someone they could consider at 51.
All right, what about Brock Bowers? He's regarded as a rare and special talent at tight end. However, I think there's a bit of caution right now with taking tight ends early. It didn't really work out so well with Kyle Pitts. Where do you see him going?
I can understand the caution. You know, I think when you're looking at overall talent, he's one of the best players in this class, like bar none. He's a top 10 overall talent when you strip sort of everything away from it. The problem is you can't strip that stuff away from it, right? Positional value matters, and it's unfortunate because it's got nothing to do with Brock Bowers himself. But the Kyle Pitts situation probably has hurt him a little bit, right? We had this same conversation then, and there's probably a bit of buyer's remorse there, right, on taking Kyle Pitts at number 4 overall in Atlanta. So I don't know that he's going to be a top 10 pick. I think the ceiling is probably the 10th overall pick for the New York Jets. You know, they're in win-now mode with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, not a whole lot of time left there. He's someone that projects as an instant contributor in a pass-heavy offense. If he gets past the Jets that are at 10 and they don't love the value, two teams that jump out at me immediately are the Indianapolis Colts at number 15 as they continue to try to surround Anthony Richardson with talent in the passing game, and also the Cincinnati Bengals at 18, you know, potentially preparing for inevitable life after T. Higgins, you know, who's entering a contract year, the fifth-year option, doesn't look like they're going to be able to re-sign him. They got to start getting some difference-making pass catchers in there, right? Potential, not of course, not a like-for-like replacement, but some successors, right, that can eat up some of those would-be available targets if Higgins isn't in Cincinnati past this year. So you look at the value there with the Bengals at 18, a quarterback like Joe Burrow, a receiver like Jamar Chase, at least 1 year of T. Higgins that'll take some attention off him. I think Brock Bowers would have a huge impact in Cincinnati, and that's a team, as we know, contending annually, right, for a Super Bowl and want to push the Chiefs to their limit. You see what they've done with Travis Kelce down there. I think Cincinnati would be a great fit for Brock Bowers if he makes it to 18.
We're talking with Justin Mello from the Draft Network, who does a great job covering all things draft-related. Justin, who do you think, if you were a betting man, would be the first defensive player off the board?
I think it's going to be Alabama edge rusher Dallas Turner. In fact, I think he'll be the only defensive player picked within the top 10. I look at teams like the Atlanta Falcons, I believe it's at 8, and Chicago Bears at 9. Both of them are in the market for premium edge defenders. You know, the Bears had the 31st ranked defense last year in terms of sacks. Only one team had fewer sacks than the Chicago Bears. Yes, they made that move to get Montez Sweat mid-season, but they're looking for a guy opposite him. It's been a sore spot in Atlanta for a very long time. They really haven't had a guy to play on the edge. You know, they've tried a bunch of mid-round draft picks, D'Angelo Malone. They had, of course, Grady Jarrett up the middle, Calais Campbell. They tried to take Bud Dupree on a reclamation project situation, but it just hasn't worked there on the edge in Atlanta. So I look at those two teams. I look at Dallas Turner. The combine testing was elite. The 40 time, the vertical jump, the broad jump, they were all outstanding. He was consistent this year for Alabama, screaming off the edge. First step explosiveness, twitchiness. He's got great bend to win the outside shoulder around the arc against offensive tackles. I think Dallas Turner is going to be the only defensive player selected in the top 10.
All right, so I'm just going to make this one a really broad question here. You can take it wherever you want. Give me a player or two in any round that you would pound the table for.
In any round? Wow.
Who are your favorite prospects, I guess? And I know
that's
everybody says, yeah, everybody is going to say the top of the draft, but how about, a little further down the draft board?
There are a couple guys that are not getting enough attention. One that I struggle with is the Alabama defensive tackle Justin Ibowigbe and LSU defensive tackle Mason Smith. They are two of my favorite interior defensive linemen in this class. They create a lot of noise for themselves up front. They are disruptors in both the pass game and the run game. The Alabama kid, I don't know why we're not talking about him enough. He had like 7 sacks this past year. He's an outstanding 3-down defender. He's great in the run game as well, has enough juice to get after quarterbacks. Those two immediately come to mind. There's also the cornerback out of Boston College, who I'm an extremely big fan of. The athletic testing was just outstanding at the NFL Combine. So if you watch that kid on tape, he is really, really special. Elijah Jones, I'm referring to, if you're not familiar. But the 40 time, the vertical, I watched the tape. I got like a second round grade on that kid. I got a higher grade on him than I do some other corners. Another would be the Oregon corner, Kyrie Jackson. I don't think he's getting enough love at all. These are all big school prospects, of course, but I think some of them deserve, you know, second round buzz. And I think some of them will go in the second round. And on draft weekend, you're going to get some of the general public surprised going, wow, I didn't think that guy would go in the second round. Well, remember I told you beforehand.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep an eye on those ones. I've heard of most of those. I don't know the Boston College kid, so I'm going to have to look him up. How about a team? Who do you think, which GM or team do you think does the draft better than the others?
I mean, that's tough. I think when you year-to-year consistency, you'll find that it's really hard to have a good draft class every single year. And I cover the Titans in Tennessee. I'll give you an example. I look at the Titans 2019 draft class. I'll put that up there with almost any draft class of the last 10 years. Okay. They drafted Jeffrey Simmons in the first round, AJ Brown in the second round, and then three multi-year high-level starters on day three, and safety Amani Hooker, who's still with the team, linebacker David Long Jr., who now starts for the Miami Dolphins, and guard Nate Davis, who now starts for the Chicago Bears. They drafted all five of them in one class. That same general manager had absolute nightmares in 2020 and 2021. Like, it's shocking. It just goes to show you, the reason I bring up that broad example, it's really hard to achieve year-to-year consistency in the draft. It just is. Not every example is as extreme as that one, but we sometimes lose sight of how difficult it is to string good draft class after good draft class on a year-to-year basis. It's just not that realistic. When I look at a couple of franchises who I think have done it really well, it's no surprise that they're some of the best, most successful franchises in the league. I think the Kansas City Chiefs have done a great job. I don't think they get enough credit. You know, of course, Patrick Mahomes, you know, we think makes everything work, but they've let a lot of superstars go over the last couple off seasons, especially in the defensive backfield, defense, offensive line in general. Drafting a Trey Smith in the sixth round, drafting a quarterback like Jalen Watson that was contributing in the seventh round, drafting a cornerback like Joshua Williams, Legarius Sneed, all of those guys were like day three picks. Okay, they got a couple linebackers in there that did really well for them. Over Creed Humphrey, one of the best centers in the NFL, was not a day one pick. They've done an outstanding job in Kansas City, sort of not making sure it's not just Travis Kelce and everyone else, because you could fall victim to that. But they've done a great job rounding out that roster in recent drafts, especially with day three picks. And the Baltimore Ravens, you know, a classic franchise. You won't love that if you're, you know, right out there in Pittsburgh, but I think they've done a really good job. You look at guys like Justin Madubuike, Kyle Hamilton. They've had a couple offensive linemen that have come in and played well for them. So when I look at year-to-year consistency, I think some of the best teams, the Eagles come to mind as well. But certainly, I think the Ravens and the Chiefs have been really, really good at it in recent years.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time, Justin. Tell our listeners, how can they find you and what do you have going on in the next week or so?
Whether you call it Twitter or X, I'm at JustinM_NFL. I'm about to publish my 180th interview with prospects in the 2024 NFL Draft. I've been extremely busy over these last couple weeks. Head over to thedraftnetwork.com, give them all a read. A bunch of high-end prospects, by the way, will be publishing within the next few days. I'm talking about Troy Fatanu. I'm talking potentially about Terrion Arnold, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Roma Dunze, you name it. We're sitting down with a bunch of amazing kids, amazing prospects right now. Mock drafts, you name it, scouting reports. We've got more than 220 of them live on the website right now. Head over to thedraftnetwork.com for all your daily draft needs.
All right, you heard it there. When we return, we're going to take a closer look at the Steelers' draft needs by talking to Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Stay with us on Under Review. Welcome back to Under Review. We got a wider view of the NFL draft landscape in the previous segment. Now we're going to zoom in a little bit on the Steelers with Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who joins us on the line right now. Brian, thanks for taking the time. I'm sure it's a busy time of year for you.
Yeah, my pleasure, Bob. It's busy, but it's also kind of winding down, and it's always fun when the draft actually arrives, because it's sort of like one of those scenes in a movie or a TV show where, like, like the cops are tracking the criminals. It's like you've got everybody on your board. You're posted up. You know who the players are. Now you're just going to sit back and survey the scene and see who the Steelers end up with. Hopefully not any actual criminals, just good football players.
Yeah, yeah, we don't want any of those. They're trying to clean things up a little bit. Well,
that would make my job more difficult. That is really gets busy if I start have to, you know, read docket sheets and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right.
We don't want any part of that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about who they might take. And for me, they've kind of pigeonholed themselves a little bit with the need for center. But
yeah.
The value at center might not be there in round one. So what do you think? Will they go that route in the first round, or will they wait and try to get one later?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly the conundrum, more or less, there. The dilemma is that, you know, you do need a player there who's capable of coming in and starting right away, but how do you thread that needle having pick 20 and then pick 51, and there's maybe only two or three guys in this draft who are capable of being an instant impact center and have done it recently in college? There are other offensive linemen who are projected to be able to make that move, but we just saw a couple years ago that transition's easier said than done. Kendrick Green was, sort of proof positive of that. But, I mean, if Jackson Powers Johnson is there at 20, that would probably be the only one I think they would even consider that high, and still they might go with a tackle over that center from Oregon. You know, Graham Barton's a guy at Duke who played left tackle the last few years, but was originally a center, and a lot of the O-line gurus that I talked to out there think he could very easily play that in the NFL. So those are sort of two options. Otherwise, I think they're going to try to find their right tackle of the future in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to pass up that value. You just don't see tackles last into the 20s usually in drafts, and this is a special one. So, you know, if they don't go center in the first round, could you see them potentially maybe trading up in round two?
Yeah, I could see a scenario where, you know, you do get one of those, like you pointed out. I mean, they've been in the position in the past where, you know, they're picking in the first round, but, you know, the tackle tiers are sort of separated to the point where if you don't get one in the top 10 or 15, there's really nobody else worth taking until the second round. But this isn't one of those drafts. You're right that I think there's, you know, 6 to 8, maybe even tackle prospects worthy of going that high. So if you do ultimately go that route, and all the players that they've been bringing in for their pre-draft visits sort of signal to you that they're doing all the homework they can on the top tackles, then yeah, you might have to use, you know, your 2 third round picks, or maybe one of those in your 4th round pick, or maybe one of those in your 2nd round pick to try to improve your positioning there in the 2nd round, trade up and snag an instant impact center right away as well. I mean, I think that's something that Omar Khan has already showed he's pretty good at doing. He can have a vision and go in with a plan, but he can also think on his feet and react to how the board is unfolding. You saw them do that last year, not just with Broderick Jones, but make some other trades throughout the draft to get some different picks and really align their needs with the players that they targeted on their board.
Yeah, I see a lot of mock drafts with Amarius Mims being the Steelers pick in round one. I know he's a little bit higher risk because he didn't play as many games in college as we might have liked, but when you look at his tape and his athleticism, it's outstanding. So should the Steelers maybe go that route in round one? How would you feel about that pick?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good pick. I think the players that I'd be most comfortable with taking there at tackle would be Mims, certainly J.C. Latham from Alabama, but it doesn't seem like he's going to make it there. And then Troy Fa'utanu from Washington, who just visited earlier today, and Taliesa Fuaga from Oregon State, two guys out of the Pac-12 who I think could potentially start from day one at right tackle, or at least really challenge Dan Moore to work their way into the starting lineup. Mims is an interesting case because, yeah, he's fairly raw in terms of not playing a lot, was hurt a lot at Georgia. But, I mean, 6'8", and if there's such a thing, a lean 340, he's probably the guy in this draft who has checked the most traditional Steelers boxes, and that, they went to his pro day down in Athens. I think he also had a separate individual pro day workout for teams either this past weekend or last week. I don't know exactly who attended that for the Steelers, but they brought him in for a visit. as well. And, you know, I think they were interested in him and met with him at the combine. So, you know, it's a little bit like college recruiting in that you link teams with players, but obviously there's so many more factors that go into predicting who ends up here in the draft. I always tell people, I don't know who the Steelers are going to draft, and neither do the Steelers at this point. That's what makes it so fun to follow.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite times of year and one of my favorite sporting events, which is strange because it's not even a game being played. But is there any defensive player that could be on the board at 20 that might tempt the Steelers to go that route?
I think the one position that they would maybe look at is, well, two. Cornerback for sure, because, you know, you have Joey Porter Jr. That's why I think you don't necessarily need to consider one too heavily in the first round, but maybe there's a guy they love. Nate Wiggins out of Clemson was here on a pre-draft visit. You know, Quinyon Mitchell is getting a lot of buzz out of Toledo as being a pure outside corner who can shut down receivers. And then there's two from Alabama. The, you know, Kool-Aid McKinstry is one, but Terrion Arnold is someone who's intriguing to me because I think he can play inside as well if he doesn't stick on the outside. Everybody raves about his football character, which we know the Steelers love. And I don't know that I consider him a corner, but Cooper DeJean from Iowa, he could play there, which he did in college, mostly in a zone scheme. But you also have people projecting him to maybe a safety role. And he was also here just on Friday for a visit. So that'll be another interesting one if corner is maybe in their back pocket as a sleeper in round one.
Well, we're talking to Brian Batko from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who does a great job covering the team. Let's move to wide receiver. I have my doubts they're going to take one in round one. I know there's a lot of good ones, but it's a deep class. I know the Steelers have had Ladd McConkey in. They've had Xavier Leggett, Ricky Pearsall, and Malachi Corley in for pre-draft visits. Who is your favorite of that group, or is there someone else you have in mind in round two?
Yeah, I think my favorite of the ones you named would probably be Ricky Pearsall because of the size, the speed, the production. I think he'd be sort of an ideal number two receiver in the NFL, and that to me is really what the Steelers are looking for. As much as you want a great player, you want to also make sure you're taking somebody who's bought into that role with George Pickens as the established number one. I think Malachi Corley could be really good as well. I mean, there's probably 15 to 20 receivers in this class from top to bottom, Bob, that I think could honestly start and be a, you know, a major contributor right away, which is why I think the Steelers don't really mind having that vacancy on the depth chart at the moment and aren't going to overpay for a Tyler Boyd or in a trade a Brandon Ayuk because they do believe in the prospects coming out of college this year. You know, two other ones that I'd keep an eye on, sort of in the same mold, could play outside, could play in the slot, are Roman Wilson from Michigan. And if he makes it to pick 51, who knows? Ladd McConkey has already played with George Pickens at Georgia. He's also would be very tempting for me if he's there.
Yeah, I'll take any Georgia player they want to give us.
Yeah, exactly. There's I think Mike Tomlin kind of said that last year when they drafted Broderick Jones and Darnell Washington. It's not rocket science why so many teams are taking those guys. They come from a successful program, and they helped win back-to-back national championships.
Absolutely. Well, what about the cornerback position? If they don't take one of those guys early in round one, maybe round two or three is their sweet spot. Is there any player that kind of stands out to you? I've heard of Andrew Phillips, the Max Melton guy. Mike Sainristil, still, I believe, from Michigan. He's a guy that catches my eye. Who catches your eye?
Yeah, two of those that you just named, Melton and Sainristil, are way up there for me. I think the issue would just be I don't know if they're going to still be available when the Steelers start looking at corner, because I think you have to address the sort of big three, in my mind, needs of tackle, center, and wide receiver in some order with your first three picks. And then that last day two pick, the second, third rounder, could kind of go a number of different ways. If it's corner, yeah, at that point, you're probably going to get somebody who maybe they're lasting into the third round because they're a little bit of a tweener, right? Maybe teams aren't sure, are you going to be an outside guy? Can you play in the slot? Are you a little undersized? Are you big enough and fast enough to do everything that's asked of you? So, I mean, those are two names. Also a couple local guys who visited from Penn Hills. Daquan Hardy went to Penn State, and then from Pitt and Aliquippa, MJ Devonshire I think Hardy would be a slot corner through and through because he's only about 5'9". Devin Shire was somebody who played outside at Pitt, but maybe he could also bump inside. You could probably get either of those guys on the third day of the draft and still get somebody who's comfortable with the setting and the surroundings here and maybe itching to make a name for himself again in his hometown.
Well, Brian, I don't want to keep you too long, but I wanted to ask you, when do you make your prediction? I won't make you spoil it here on Under Review, but when do you make that prediction? And what should we follow in the lead up to the draft with your work?
Yeah, I had a lot of people asking me in my Steelers chat today on the Post-Gazette website who they're going to take. I'm like, you got to give me a few more days. I'm going to do my first and only full mock draft. I'm not sure the exact day yet. I bet it'll probably be next week at some point because kind of want to make sure that all the tea leaf reading is done before you put that out there. But yeah, I mean, we're going to have so much draft content between now and next Thursday on post-gazette.com. Ray Fittipaldi will have his last full 7-round Steelers mock draft. I'll do a full first round prediction for the rest of the NFL if you're somebody who follows the other teams as well. So, keep checking back on the PG site every day. We'll have plenty of those and plenty of podcasts as well, dissecting all the different angles for the Steelers as we come down the home stretch.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And I also listen to your North Shore podcast, and that's really, really a good tool too. So thanks again,
appreciate
Brian.
That.
Appreciate
yep.
it. All right.
Anytime. See you, Bob.
See ya. Stay with us on Under Review. We'll continue the draft talk when we return. Welcome back to Under Review. It's my pleasure to go back out to the phone line to talk to Jerry Dulac, who does a great job covering the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Jerry, thanks for joining us. Did you enjoy the Masters before we get into some Steelers talk?
Bob, good to be with you. I did enjoy it. I enjoy it better when I'm there. It was a rare non-appearance there for me, but that's okay. I had some conflicts that prohibited me from going. But, yeah, I always enjoy the Masters. It's my favorite golf event, as it is, I'm sure, for most everybody who loves watching it. And, it was great to see Scottie Scheffler win again. He's just validating his standing as the number one player in the world. And you look at his last four starts, Bob, win, win, tie for second, win. That's pretty impressive. Only Nelly Korda has a better stretch going. She has four consecutive wins going for it. But Scottie Scheffler is a great guy. I think people can see that. And he's a great player, and it's a nice combination. It's good to see.
Yeah, it sure feels like he's the next superstar coming through. I would be remiss if I did not mention Pittsburgh native Neil Shipley, the low amateur at the Masters, who played his final round with Tiger Woods. Were you familiar with him before, and what were your thoughts on his weekend at the Masters?
I am, Bob, and I actually talked with him earlier today. Neil's a tremendous player. He proved it again over the last 4 days. I knew what he did locally, winning the West Penn Open, winning the Pennsylvania Amateur. So you knew he was a quality player. But the summer he had last year, nationally, leading up to the USAM, like 3 seconds and a fourth, and then a finalist in the US Amateur. The only guy who had a better, only amateur, had a better record than him last year was the guy who beat him in the US Amateur Finals, and that was Nick Dunlap, who, as you know, won a PGA Tour event this year, first time an amateur won since 1991. And yet he really did a disservice by not picking him for the U.S. Walker Cup team. So my point is, you knew last year that Neil was a quality player on the national level, and this just further proves it as well. And I've talked to several people who know him, and they expect him to, and he does too, to be able to go out on the PGA Tour and compete. We haven't seen that in a long, long time from a Western PA guy.
Yeah, it sounds like we'll be seeing a lot of him too. All right, let's move on to the Steelers. A couple of players that we may be seeing in the future, it just seems like these rumors do not want to die, would be safety Justin Simmons and wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. What are you hearing on those fronts, Jerry?
Well, I will tell you that once they signed Deshaun Elliott, Justin Simmons kind of went out the window. So I don't foresee that happening at all. That being said, I thought he would have been a great pickup for the Steelers. But, you know, when you sign Patrick Queen to 3 years, $41 million, and you're already paying Cam Hayward $22 million, excuse me, he's going to count $22 million, you're paying T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick the most of any player at their positions, you've already spent a lot of money on defense. And so it's going to be difficult after adding Patrick Queen to bring in another guy who might cost a few pennies more. So Deshaun Elliott precluded that move. As for Brandon Ayuk, I will tell you that they've had their eye on getting a number two receiver for several months now. And they were hoping it would be Mike Williams after, you know, the 49ers indicated that they are not interested in trading Brandon Ayuk. And the Steelers were going to talk to Mike Williams, and 2 days before they were going to talk to him, the Jets wouldn't let him leave, and he signed for $15 million, which the Steelers were not going to pay for 1 year. So they would like to get that guy, you know, they would have liked to get that guy before the draft. They signed two veterans, but that, they're depth guys, you know, Kez Watkins and Van Jefferson. Nice pickups, but they're just, you know, they're Allen Robinson, basically. And so the only problem is if you go find a receiver in a draft, which they will, now you have a pretty young receiving room because you have George Pickens in his third year, Calvin Austin in his third year, but really his second, and then a rookie. And so that's why they would have liked to, and I'm not going to rule it out, it's just that there's not a lot of options available. But if the 49ers indicated that they wanted to trade Ayuk, which they have not done, they have said the opposite, then I will say that I don't think that deal is going to happen. But all I will say is if it does, I certainly won't fall off my chair.
All right. Well, the Steelers have other big needs, of course. Center, right tackle, cornerback come to mind. Which position of those do you think is more most likely to be addressed in the first round?
Well, I will tell you this, Bob, and keep this in mind. They don't need a tackle. They have tackles. They have Dan Moore and Broderick Jones. So they really don't need a tackle. They would like a right tackle so they can move Broderick Jones to left tackle, but they don't need a tackle. But they do need a center. And they can't afford to wait till the second or third round to find a starting center. You have to draft a guy who you know is a plug-and-play guy, who is ready to come in and start right away. Now, you see many centers go at number 20? No, you don't. Tyler Linderbaum, who was probably rated higher than any center in this year's draft a couple years ago, didn't go till 25 to the Baltimore Ravens. So you typically don't see centers go that high. Would they like a corner? Yeah, but they have corners. They don't have a center. And so that should tell you what they're going to do. The only thing that I will say is, because they can't wait for the second round because none of those guys that they like will be there, the centers. And so the only way it won't be a center in the first round is if before the draft or before the first round begins, they make a trade to move up in the second round where they feel that they can get one of the centers they like.
Well, that's really interesting.
I am expecting them because they need one and they can't afford to dilly-dally. I think you're going to see them take a center, and I think you're going to see them take the guy from Duke.
Oh, wow, Graham Barton. Okay, well, he can also play a little tackle, and I think they do value the versatility, don't they, Jerry?
Yeah, but they're more interested in a center. They're more interested in a Marquise Pouncey. I'm not saying he's that. I'm not saying there is one. But they want a guy, a type of center, who's going to come in and be a mainstay for 10 years on that line.
All right, well, we got just a few minutes left here with Jerry Dulac from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Is there any player at all that they would trade up for in round one? Maybe a Rome Odunze or something? Oops, sounds like we may have lost Jerry here. But you heard his take there. He thinks it's going to be a center in round one, which would be quite interesting, and there's only a few available, so they got to get them early. We do thank Jerry for his time, and we thank all of our guests for their time today. So I am alone in the studio, as you know, but I would like to bring up that it just doesn't feel the same without my compadre, so I'm going to get lost on my own. So let's go ahead and do that here real quick. I'm going to say hashtag get lost to getting lost by myself. I hope I have the guys back with me next week. Don't forget that we are planning to do a special draft night show on Thursday, April 25th at a special time, 7 o'clock. Remember, our Wednesday night show is precluded by the Pirates, but join us next Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. for a pre-draft special. Dave D and myself bringing you some live coverage of the NFL draft. All right, so for Get Lost tonight, let me go ahead and cue the music. I'm going to say hashtag get lost to get lost and instead give you a quick feel-good story from the weekend. Did you see Andrew McCutchen hit his 300th home run Sunday? As cool as that was, the story of the home run ball is even more heartwarming. The ball could have landed anywhere among the sea of Phillies fans. Instead, it ricocheted off 9-year-old Torin Mehta and his pirate cap into the hands of his dad. They didn't even know they were holding a piece of history in their hands initially. When they found out, they didn't hold it for ransom. They simply asked to meet Andrew McCutchen. And there's a video of that encounter on the internet. It's well worth your time. I want to thank you for joining me tonight. And like I said, next week, we'll catch you for our pre-draft special when we go under review on Connect FM.